welcome to Skagit Talks. Interviews with interesting people from Skagit Valley College, as well as folks from around the Skagit Valley. Now, Skagit Talks. Welcome to Skagit Talks. In the first half of our program, KSVR presents the Skagit Valley News from around the Skagit Valley, as reported by Joanna Bruno. The second half of Skagit Talks will be our interview from the community and Skagit Valley College. Now, KSVR, Skagit Valley's community radio, presents the news.
Environmental Lobby Day, January 26th, drew a crowd of 400 folks from across Western Washington to Olympia to meet with senators and representatives. The grassroots lobbyists focus on clean water, BPA-free baby bottles, keeping the environmental protections in the budget, and protecting the Clean Energy Initiative, I-937. Public Lands Commissioner Peter Goldmark, who addressed the group last year also, noted that Department of Natural Resources has worked hard in the past year toward cleanup of Puget Sound.
I've delivered on many of the promises that I made. I think those of you who have been tracking what we at DNR have been doing know that we care deeply about the cleanup and recovery of the Puget Sound. Know that we have made a definite difference throughout the Puget Sound and will continue to do so because we strongly believe that this is an incredible resource that we must be part of preserving and protecting in perpetuity because it is a unique feature of the landscape here in Washington, and we will do our utmost to play our part. Now, I've also been involved in a number of other policy issues having to do with such esoterica as having to do with protection of some of our unique landscapes across the state. During my tenure at DNR, we have protected nearly 15,000 acres through natural resource conservation areas, both in the Middle Fork of the Snoqualmie, Debaugh Bay, and in Klickitat County. I hold you nearly 400 strong here today, and I want to encourage you to help protect the budgets of those agencies that act to preserve and protect the environment. And I hope you recognize that DNR is one of those pivotal agencies that has a tremendous impact across the landscape. And I also want you to think about interacting with our strategic plan, which is now being rolled out just today. And there will be 7 public hearings across the state, and I encourage you to find out where those are. I think we'll have some postings on our website about where those are, and I encourage you to come to those meetings to help articulate how you feel that DNR can help serve the people of the state in the coming years.
Hans Dunshi, 44th District Representative, spoke about the nature of capitalism. He pointed out that if we stop funding certain things that are necessary, eventually we will have to make up the losses.
We stand, actually, as the new paradigm, the new way of thinking. If you think about the old paradigm of consume, 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 like yeast in the bottle of in the bottom of a beer bottle. Think about the new paradigm of sustainability. How do you get people to think about sustainability? Because, for instance, in the budget priority, in the clean water priority, and in the baby bottle priority, that's all about sustainability. In budget, if we cut the budget in the natural resources area, it's a hole that we dig deeper that we must eventually come out of. We're in a little recession. And that's obsessed most people. But why would you want to make the problem worse by cutting those areas that you will have to go back and repair and mend and heal later on? And why would you throw more toxins off of the impervious area? Why would you throw more oil and cadmium and mercury into your waterways that then you would have to clean up later, which costs you millions and millions and millions? And why would you curse the next generation with toxics in their body, BPH. But the thing I'm working on actually is it's called the jobs bill. But what I haven't talked a lot about is the CO2 reduction in it, which is equivalent to 150,000 cars taken off the road every year. That's done as part of a jobs bill. Notice the great blend between capitalism and sustainability. $190 million saved for the taxpayers, the equivalent of the household, the electricity for the households in Everett and Tacoma put together. Conservation, CO2 reduction as a jobs bill. Because this is what we have to do with capitalism. We have to make it do good things. Instead of doing unsustainable activities and activities that give us a greater deficit, sort of a pass on to our future generations, if we clean up the water, we actually make a healthier environment for them doing good things. The Clean Water Bill is a jobs bill again. $100 million a year put to work, putting people to work, doing good things. You can do bad things like dig mines and, you know, harvest coal and then go burn it in Centralia, or you can do good things like biomass in the forest, where you take that woody matter off the ground and you reduce forest fires and you create fuel that you can use that is grown here in Washington State that is sustainable, and that's just cleaning up the forest, not knocking down any trees. You know, those things, you change the economy, you change the paradigm of our society from unsustainable to sustainable. And that's what you're about. You're about actually saving capitalism and making the next generations have a decent life. We will be criminals if we turn over to the next generations an unsustainable world so that they crash. That is an unconscionable crime. And if we do not change our ways, if we do not make our world sustainable, we should be tried.
Clean water affects everyone, especially in Skagit County. Brendan Sahovic of Washington Conservation Voters pointed out the importance of keeping our water safe from toxics and providing jobs.
We really believe that the future of clean water in Washington depends on our ability to take action on the most pressing water quality problem in the state right now. That's polluted stormwater. A little background, you know, each time it rains, literally millions of gallons of pollutants each year washes into Puget Sound, Spokane River, our lakes and streams all over the state. We're talking about some pretty nasty stuff here. This is oil, this is pesticides from our lawn, these are toxic chemicals. We're actually required by a federal law, the Clean Water Act, to control stormwater pollution. Cities and counties and ports have to clean these problems up. The problem is there's actually no funding to complete the job right now. What little we do comes out of our pockets right now through property taxes, through high utility rates. That's the why, and we'll talk a lot more about that throughout the day today, but what I really want to focus on is the why now. Why now for stormwater funding? And the most important reason for me is that we're running out of time for clean water in Washington. If we're going to meet our goals as a state, cleaning up Puget Sound by the year 2020, we have to begin right now to control stormwater cleanup. Now, the big reasoning secret is working for clean water. We need to put Washington back to work. We all know what tough times we're in, high unemployment, tough situation as a state and across the country. This is a jobs bill. Every penny we spend on stormwater cleanup in the state of Washington goes directly into the workers' projects. This is labor-intensive construction work. This is infrastructure for our cities and counties. We think this is a smart solution for Washington right now at a time where we desperately need more good-paying jobs across the state. And the last reason, you know, right now, Washington families shouldn't have to shoulder the whole cost of pollution cleanup, and they just simply can't right now. What we need is a more balanced solution to this problem that asks polluters to pay their fair share of stormwater cleanup. We're talking about the hazardous substance tax here. So those of you that have heard about this bill, you'll see there's a little change in strategy. That's the legislative process. But the intent of this bill is still exactly the same. It's going to do the exact same thing. The hazardous substance tax, a quick background, was passed by a voter initiative over 20 years ago in 1987 to address toxic cleanup all around the state. It's a core essential protection in the state of Washington to keep our families healthy and safe. The same pollutants that are taxed under the hazardous substance tax are the same problems that we have in clean water all around the state. It's petroleum, it's pesticides, it's toxic chemicals. So we think it's the common sense solution for Washington to extend that, raise the tax and extend it to cover the most pressing water pollution problem here in the state.
For Ivy Sager Rosenthal of the Washington Toxics Coalition, the Baby Bottle Act passing the House was something to cheer about. The Senate bill is not as comprehensive, however.
So you probably already know this is about a bill that protects children and families from the infamous chemical bisphenol A, or BPA. And it's a really important bill. If Washington passes it, we'd only be the third state in the nation to have such a bill. Director Sturdivant said earlier, not only is that good for Washington's children and families, but it also shows the rest of the nation that it can be done. And we've been a leader before on toxics issues, and passing this bill will make us even more of a leader, and it's really exciting.
Carrie Sahovic of the Washington Environmental Council pointed out that although budget difficulties face our state, there are important issues that need to be funded.
We all know that one thing is painfully clear. The economic recession is threatening things that we all care about: education, health care, and environmental protections. Environmental protection programs are a very small part of our state's budget, but as you all know, the state plays an absolutely critical role in protecting our environment, ensuring our quality of life, protecting our long-term public health, and ensuring economic opportunity here in Washington. Unfortunately, last year's budget cuts took a huge toll on those critical core protections. They've undercut our efforts to prevent chronic pollution and the destruction of our natural resources. And this year, as we all know, is no better. Toxic contamination cleanup, water quality, water resources, air quality, habitat protection, and transportation choices are all under significant threat. And that means that the Washington that we all love and cherish and care about is under threat. Last year, 25% of the budgets for natural resource agencies were cut. That's 2 times greater than any other area of the budget. So any further reductions to those core programs that we rely on for safeguards for our health and economic future, any further reductions will really cost agencies their basic functions. They'll be unable to deliver on those basic functions. And it will cost us more, as Representative Dunst said earlier, will cost us more down the road in terms of cleanup and recovery, and we just can't afford that. These programs provide the basic safeguards for our health and quality of life and well-being, and the cuts are being felt far and wide throughout the state. For example, there are 10,000 sites across Washington that are contaminated by toxic chemicals, heavy metals, and other pollutants. And because of the cuts to the toxic cleanup program, sites all across the state, from the Duwamish River to the Spokane River, are at risk for those cleanups being delayed or even halted. And we're hearing all throughout the state folks expressing their concerns for the impact these cuts will have on their communities. A nurse in Tacoma who sees firsthand the impacts of air pollution on kids with asthma and knows that dollars spent on air quality programs are dollars well spent for our kids' health and well-being. By cutting critical funding for programs as basic as clean air and clean water, we're doing an enormous disservice to our economy long-term. And those are just a few examples of really what's at risk. So that's why we've joined forces with a huge and diverse coalition of education advocates and healthcare workers who are coming together to call on our elected officials here in Olympia to pursue a balanced and responsible approach to this year's revenue shortfall. Together, we absolutely must make our voices heard. There's a rally taking place here in Olympia again on February 15th, where we will join forces and call on our elected officials to really say loudly and clearly that we want a budget that protects our kids' health and the future of Washington State. These cuts undermine our values as Washingtonians. Right now, Washington is a place where people want to raise their families, and we need to keep it that way. Your voice is essential. Legislators are facing what is, as we all know, a huge economic crisis, the worst since the Great Depression, and they're sorting out what's important right now. It's your job to explain to your legislators why environmental protections are so critical and essential to ensuring our kids' health and the future of our state. And I know that together, we can do it.
This is Joanna Bruno for KSVR News for Skagit Valley. Thanks for listening to 91.7 FM. Please stay tuned for another Skagit Talks interview.
Hello, this is Monica Chaplin, and I'm with Skagit Talks. I'm here with Ryan Walters, who's a civil attorney with the Skagit County Prosecutor's Office and also the Sustainability Administrator for a new group called the Climate Change and Sustainability Task Force, and he's here to talk with us today about that. Ryan, if you could answer, what was the inspiration for creating the task force itself?
Well, the Skagit County Commissioners and the Skagit County Administrator, the former administrator, back in 2007, indicated that they wanted to do something with sustainability in general and climate change specifically. They wanted to reduce our energy consumption. They wanted to reduce our fuel consumption. They wanted us as a county, as a region, but also as local government, as an organization, to be more sustainable and to be more efficient. So we started thinking about this back in 2007. And in 2008, we developed a resolution, which is what the Skagit County Commissioners use to instruct staff to do things, developed a resolution to create a citizen task force, which is a 14-member group that has been working over the past year to develop a set of recommendations for Skagit County to implement going forward, you know, in 2010, 2011. It's a relatively long-range plan. For increasing the general sustainability of county operations and also to do some things in the community to help improve energy efficiency among residential households, among businesses, to improve their waste management so that they are producing less non-recyclable waste, so that they're composting their food scraps, and so that they are just in a more sustainable mode to develop a more sustainable culture here in Skagit County.
So this climate action plan, do you see that any of these things, what we might see in 2010?
Yeah, so the climate action plan is the work product of the task force. The task force started at the beginning of 2009, and they have pretty much finished their work now at the end of 2009. The climate action plan incorporates all of their recommendations. It also incorporates some recommendations from an all-staff working group. And will hopefully be approved by the county commissioners sometime next month. And it includes a really long list of recommendations. The plan is about 85 pages, and that may vary by the time we get finished editing. But some of the things that we're looking at are, first of all, changing a lot of our county buildings. One of the primary recommendations of the task force is that we participate in a state program that will provide the funds to upgrade some of our buildings so that they are much more energy efficient than they are now. Skagit County spends about $530,000 a year on electricity, something like another $100,000 on natural gas. And so we expect that through upgrades to the buildings, through changing some of the behavior of employees, for instance, not using space heaters and making better use of the climate controls that are in the building, the thermostats, and programming the thermostats better, and shutting down computers at night, that we should be able to save something like 10% to 15% of our current electricity usage through relatively simple changes and some structural changes to the building. That adds up to, you know, almost $100,000 right there. And that could employ one or two more staff members. And we've had to lay off several staff members this year because of, you know, the declining sales tax revenue and other revenues that the county faces. So that's one of our first and maybe most important things that we're doing for Skagit County as an organization. But on the regional level, there are also a number of recommendations. We want to expand our event recycling program. We lend recycle bins to organizations that are holding public events. The Arts Festival in Anacortes each year will now have recycling because we lend them the bins that make that happen. We want to expand that program. We want to ban polystyrene, styrofoam takeaway containers. And that's a long-term process, but that may get started this year. We'll need the cooperation of all the cities in Skagit County to make that happen. That might be a somewhat difficult endeavor, but it's pretty important because styrofoam is pretty bad. And then there are a number of other recommendations, a lot of different things that we hope will reduce the the carbon footprint, the amount of greenhouse gas that we emit at both as county as an organization and county as a region, but will also help save a lot of money. I mean, we project at the county we'll spend some money as a result of this plan, but we'll also save a lot of money. So we expect to have a net savings of at least $130,000 once this plan gets implemented. That's not just change. That's quite a bit of money. It saves quite a few jobs, potentially, or allows us to do more programs that provide more services to people.
So what's the long-term plan? Would you say, do you like have a 5 or a 10-year plan, or are you just sort of thinking in the next few years?
Most of the recommendations in the Climate Action Plan call for implementation between 2010 and 2013. There are some pieces of the plan that have to do with land use. There's an entire chapter devoted to land use planning, land use policy. Those are not actually adopted and put into effect when the county commissioners adopt the plan, because we have to go through a significant public participation process for any changes in land use planning. But those may be longer term. So we expect to do an update to our shoreline management plan relatively soon, 2013, an upgrade to our comprehensive land use plan for the entire county, but it's also on a specific timetable, you know, 2012, and sometimes it takes a little longer. So those will be a little bit longer term, and they will probably also, besides taking into account plans and policies that will reduce emissions, they may also take into account plans and policies that will help us adapt to the effects of climate change that we know are already coming. And that adaptation component was not the focus of this climate action plan. This climate action plan is all about how to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions, our carbon footprint right now. That next stage, what to do about how we are going to adapt to increased sea level, to reduced river flows at different times of the year, to different weather patterns, more storm surges, all the different climate effects that we expect, and we expect to increase as time goes on. We're not planning to adapt to those yet. That will be the subject of some future process that we will have to deal with. But right now, we're just trying to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions, which are causing the problem to begin with, and to become more efficient.
So what would you say is the hardest thing to overcome for the group? What would be the easiest?
Well, the group itself, we appointed 15 members in December of last year, and they got started in January of this year, and we immediately broke them into 5 work groups. So we had a work group devoted to solid waste. We had a work group devoted to renewable energy and energy efficiency. We had one working on green purchasing, because the county makes a lot of purchases. They buy a lot of paper. They buy a lot of vehicles. How can we purchase smarter and better things? There's a work group devoted to outreach and education, because we immediately realized that one of the biggest components, and this might go directly to your question, what is the hardest thing to do? The biggest component, the most important component, and probably the most difficult, is communicating and educating staff and the public about what it is we're doing, why we're doing it, why it's important. The 4 work groups: energy, solid waste, outreach and education, green purchasing. And then the 5th work group was land use, because land use is a big reason that we have a lot of the transportation-related greenhouse gas emissions. Transportation is a really large component of our state's carbon footprint and of Skagit County's carbon footprint. And there's not much you can do about transportation, especially at the county level. Frequently, we found ourselves limited at the county level because the county has relatively small amount of regulatory authority. We can't require people to get more efficient vehicles, for instance. And the state has a limited amount of regulatory authority there. If the state can't require you to get more efficient vehicles, how do we get more efficient vehicles, and how do we reduce the number of miles each vehicle travels? Well, one of the important things is to encourage densification so that you're building houses closer together and also closer to where people need to work and where they need to travel for food and shopping and that kind of thing.
So just more long-term thinking when you're planning. So we have a few more minutes left, and I just want to ask you one more question. What could the community do to support the efforts of the task force?
Well, there are going to be a lot of community-based programs. So there will be hopefully the Styrofoam Initiative, I mean, these are all draft right now, but the Styrofoam Initiative, the Vent Recycling Initiative, the, there will be hopefully a residential home energy efficiency initiative. So there will be incentives for you to increase the energy efficiency of your home through insulation or more efficient HVAC systems, that kind of thing. What we're looking for the public is enthusiastic participation in these programs when we get them started. And, of course, also if the public wants to help, if they want to, if they have other ideas, if they have, if they're aware of sources of funding, if they would like to pursue something on their own and they need encouragement or support from the county, then we're definitely interested in hearing from them.
So how would they contact you?
Well, a lot of the information that I've talked about today and the draft plan is available at skagitcounty.net/sustainability. And my email address is there on the website, and it's ryanw@co.skagit.wa.us.
This has been Monica Chaplin with Skagit Talks, and I've been talking with Ryan Walters, the creator of the Climate Change and Sustainability Task Force. And if you want to just give us your contact information one more time so people can get that.
That's Ryan Walters. My email address is ryanw@co.skagit.wa.us. And I encourage people to go to the website at skagitcounty.net/sustainability.
And they can also go there for more information about the climate change initiative.
That's right.
Yeah. All right, great. Thank you.
Thank you.
This has been Monica Chaplin with Skagit Talks.
Skagit Talks was produced by Joseph C. McGuire and engineered by Jay Charles. Tune in next time for more Skagit Talks.
Learn all about the denizens of Puget Sound. Creature Features lets you into the secrets of the sea and land life, from the tiniest fish to the largest mammals. Let's enter into the world of Creature Features as produced by Britta Eshte of Puget Sound Voices. Distribution made possible by a grant from the Corporation of Public Broadcasting. Now, Creature Features.
At the beach, search among rocks and in tide pools, and you may see what look like little clusters of flowers. Could they be flowers? Or some kind of strange animal? This is the aggregating anemone, usually light green with tentacles tipped pink or purple. The anemone is a voracious carnivore that uses stinger cells on its tentacles to paralyze its prey. Anemones will eat almost anything, including crabs, and then spew out the shell. The name aggregating anemone comes from the fact that this animal can rapidly clone itself. Although all groups of anemones live side by side and appear to be identical, they aren't. Each group is different. The clones at the edge are warriors and fiercely defend their group. If a warrior comes in contact with an enemy, they exchange poison darts, causing wounds. The warriors then withdraw, leaving a corridor between groups. When the tide goes out, anemones exposed to air retract their tentacles to conserve moisture. They shrink and look more like little green lumps than elegant flowers. Remember to watch your step when tide pooling so that you don't crush or disturb the resting anemones or other tide pool critters. Washington State University Skagit County Beach Watchers brings you Creature Feature in partnership with People for Puget Sound. This has been Creature Features with Ernest Tutte.